For the next hour, we'll be talking about Dungeons & Dragons, actually role-playing games, the history of them, the traditional ones, without computers.
Geek Speaks podcast and website are brought to you by GNI, a full-featured web hosting facility that provides co-location services and high-bandwidth connectivity. More information about GNI is available at www.gnihosting.com.
It's Friday, October 21st, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California, and it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today, on Geek Speak, after a spot of geek news, we're speaking with Derek Passaros and Matthew Widener about the history of role-playing games, the traditional ones that use dice. During the second half of the show, we'll welcome you to join the conversation. The phone numbers you can take down now to do that if you'd like, 476-2800. Or 1-800-655-5877, and of course you can do that online as well at geekspeak.org. But if you're itching to make a phone call now, because I'm not going to invite you to do that, join the show until about half an hour from now, but if you're itching to make a phone call now, of course, you can do so by pledging to KUSP. I've brought my wife Daria along today to help us out.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. We are very thankful that we have a matching pledge this morning from Full Steam Marketing and Design. They are the company that designed the new KUSP logo, and they will match every pledge to KUSP up to a total of $365. So your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar if you can call us, and those numbers are 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877, or, of course, you can pledge securely on the website at kusp.org.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that in just a minute, but let me introduce the people that are in the room here today. We do have quite a large crew. That's Daria Troxell speaking right there. We have Miles Elam. We have our guests, Matt and Derek, who probably won't be talking until the subject at hand starts. And we also have, of course, Sean Cleveland. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi, Lyle.
Hello.
Before we start a discussion about role-playing games, the history of role-playing games, and of course the most famous one is Dungeons & Dragons. That's the kind of realm we're talking about. Before we do that, let's do some geek news. Sean, I'm going to start with you, sir.
Good morning. So, you know, I was up on, I think it was Slashdot or someone.
One
of those geeky sites. And somebody mentioned this article on Salon.com. I usually don't go there because you have to pay for it, but I've always wanted to pay just because articles, they always give you the first paragraph or two, and they're very enticing. And this one was quite interesting. It's about,
what did it say?
It's about American broadband and just how behind the times we are. I don't know if you realize this, but in France, you can get super fast DSL, unlimited phone service, and 100 channels of TV for $38 a month.
What?
In South Korea, super fast connections are less than $30 a month. And places like Finland, Canada, and Hong Kong have much faster internet connections at a lower price than what is available here in the U.S.
What is that? What's that from? Yeah, Derek, you're welcome to join us.
Go ahead. In fact, hold on. Since 2001, the U.S. has slipped from 4th to 16th in the world in broadband use per capita.
Wow.
I was just going to say I believe it, because when I was in Tibet, it was easier actually to get online in Lhasa than it was to, let's say, get online in Chicago or something. There was more access to internet and more access to internet when I was in Tibet than there was in Japan.
Interesting.
It actually reminds me when I was flying around a bit earlier this year, where I'd go to Chicago, be in O'Hare, and it's like, okay, spend a whole bunch of money to get internet access when you're only going to be in the airport for a couple of hours. And yet when I was in, I believe it was Columbus, Ohio, the airport there was just free wireless. And it seems to make so much more sense. You go there, you find out what's around in the city, you find out what's there, spurring commerce, but...
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the input on bad access to the internet in the United States. Such a charming and
you know, we need
to
talk about it more.
Yeah, we do, we do.
Yeah.
All right, let's do the next news story. Miles, I'll go with you.
This one should be fairly geeky. It has to do with Snort. Snort is what's
that
known as...
That doesn't sound geeky. That sounds illicit.
It's known as an intrusion detection system, an IDS. And what it will do is it will detect viruses over the network, or viruses, spyware, things like that. It'll actually be watching the network for bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And will either try to track that information, or in some cases will even try to interrupt that behavior. In other words, it'll notice that, oh, that looks like this piece of spyware that I know about, and they're trying to make a connection out. I'm going to send some packets to the network that close the connection automatically.
Hmm. It sounds like an episode of Star Trek I once saw where you had genetically modified humans, and their immune systems went out and attacked things, but unfortunately killed other people. It was really bad. Is this safe?
Yeah, that's great, Lyle.
Ouch! I'm going to go sit in the corner and weep.
Issue being, though, that there was a vulnerability in it, specifically in its detection of a product that, you know, okay, no one laugh. Okay, you're going to laugh anyway. Back orifice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. it was back orifice used to be a it was an exploit to be able to get onto Windows machines and do whatever you wanted with the server.
It basically used it was kind of like a Timbuktu or something like that. Right.
Over time it actually became a actual legitimate people would use it for administering their Windows machine, because it allowed them free and unfettered access to machines in the network, to a large number of them. Facility to locate and detect back orifice,
right,
is what is causing the problem. And so,
because it's detecting and it's being used legitimately, and it's and this service.
No, there's a vulnerability in Snort that it's parsing to be able to understand. Oh, that is a back orifice, you know, series of packets. Someone could construct a packet that could.
That would look like that, and therefore get around it. I see. All right. Well, thanks. Is Snort really being relied upon that way, or is it just kind of a second
Snort
measure?
Snort is actually is one of the most popular intrusion detection systems that are out there. But the simple workaround for that is you disable the back orifice portion of detection, and you should be fine until the upgrade. And it's only version 2.4.
Which means that Snort would then stop those packets still, right?
No, I mean, it wouldn't be looking for those packets.
All right, well, thank you, Miles. We have such a busy show today. I'm going to cut the news, I think, a little bit short. And I want to just talk to you all about why you listen to KOSP, and a little bit about why we volunteer. And I'll tell you why I volunteer. It's kind of a family tradition for me. My father was here for years at KOSP. He did in the green room. And then he became station developer and station manager, Peter Troxell. And all throughout that time, I'd come to the station quite a bit. I used to play hooky a lot at school. He helped me out with that. And come into the air room and sit in the corner and listen to stuff I didn't understand. And it it kind of became a part of my life, so much so that I do Geek Speak now. Every week, volunteering a lot of the time of my family life, and my wife can attest to this, to be here at the station to help broaden the community that I support and live in. And that's why I volunteer. And I listen to KOSP because of the great content. If you listen more than a couple hours a day, or even more than a few minutes a day, we invite you to participate in supporting us. The phone numbers are 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877.
And we'd like to thank a couple of listeners for their pledges. Sandra from Paso Robles has called in with your continued support of KUSP. Thank you very much. And Gareth from Santa Cruz, also a continuing member. And thank you, Gareth, for your pledge as well.
I believe Gareth has called in before with questions and comments.
I mean, it's funny when you talk about why you are part of KUSP, why you get involved. And I'm remembering 5 years ago when you were, hey, Miles, I'm doing this radio show. I need someone quick.
Yes.
And going there and through that met
I
Sean
never do that
and John
anymore. I plan so far ahead of time. I never.
and then right. In terms of family, I mean, the geeks have become
we ended
our
up
family.
Being family. And then over the years, hearing, getting emails from and getting phone calls from folks all around the area, from all across the Central Coast, getting emails from Europe and from Australia and other places talking about, yes, we love the show, we love getting this information, it's not out there. It makes you feel good. It makes you feel like part of a community.
Yeah, it really does.
And that's really what KOSP is about. It's about community. It's about, you know, supporting each other. And
yeah, we've even had some gentlemen who were in Soledad write to the show with technical questions.
In the prison, not just the town.
Well, yes, I actually meant in the prison. And I was really touched by that they had actually, you know, sent in letters asking, you know, for our advice, technically, just, you know, because it just means that we're reaching, you know, a community we weren't even aware of that was able to listen to the show.
Let's not forget Lee in Amsterdam.
Lee in Amsterdam, who listens all the time. Lee, you're welcome to make a pledge. And I've been listening to the KOSP all week and hearing the way we pitch the importance of the station and let people know that, you know, we're here, we're doing good content, you're listening to it, and we want your support. And one thing that struck me is that sometimes it doesn't sound like we're talking to you. It doesn't sound like we're addressing you. So I thought, well, what would be the way to do it? The way to do it, to really sound like addressing, is to figure out, take the name and a town and just start rattling through. So, you know, Frank in Monterey. Frank in Monterey, stop. Don't go to Starbucks right now. Please give us a phone call. The problem is that takes a long time to go through all those deviations. We can do the math, but please, if you are Frank in Monterey, call us now, please. But the point is that we are speaking to you because you listen to KOSP. You've been hearing a bit this week. We're talking to you. We'd like you to support us. We'd like you to support the station. And it's really easy, and you can choose the amount.
And we do still have that matching pledge. Full Steam Marketing and Design will match every pledge to KOSP up to $365, so your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar. If you are a returning member or a new member to KOSP, your pledge is going to go twice as far right now. If you will please call in to 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877 or, of course, pledging securely at the website at kusp.org.
Thank you, Daria and Miles. You're listening to Geek Speak, and Geek Speak, what we do most of the time is talk about technology. Today, we're going to talk about other geek behaviors. We're going to talk about the online role-playing arena. Not the online, excuse me, the offline role-playing. The role-playing, mostly commonly known from Dungeons & Dragons. People sit around a table with dice, paper, and pencils, and they play these fantasy and other types of genre games. So I've invited some friends over that know quite a bit about it. We've been playing games together for years, including Sean Cleveland, who's one of the geeks here too. And
oh my God, I'm so embarrassed.
No shame, brother.
It's been outed.
So I wanted to get some thoughts about role playing from some people that really know quite a bit about it. So Matt Widener and Derek Passaros are both here. Let's talk a little bit about the history of role playing games. I know that there was war simulation games early on, and things kind of came from that. What are those first war simulations? Why were they created? What's the history of that? Derek, you want to take that?
Sure. War simulations have been around since, Rome.
War.
Yeah, exactly. Since war, exactly. So from putting little rocks in places and making your boundaries, and it uses strategy. It wasn't till 1915 that H.G. Wells published the first rules for a war game called Little Wars.
H.G.
Wells, yeah, the father of science fiction, is also the grandfather of role playing. And
I wouldn't call him the father of science fiction.
Well, it's debatable, I guess.
I can think of a lot of fathers.
Yeah, well, it's science fiction's kind of a.
But we can clearly say that he's the grandfather of role.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah, we can clearly.
So,
do that.
What did he produce? What did he make that was different than what had been done before?
There were no rules published for the masses. Usually, that kind of wargaming simulation kind of thing was up to the individuals that were doing it. There weren't acknowledged widespread rules,
and there might have been rules or ways of doing it taught in military training schools.
Yeah,
but this wasn't for the general mass. This was for military people.
Usually, yeah. Okay. And this is the first one that was for the masses. And he was the first person to encourage people to actually collect armies to individualize their preferences for what kind
instead
of war
instead of just having stones to actually have little figurines.
And figurines were used also by the military and that kind of
right.
thing.
We see figurines for ages. People have used characters to represent troop movement and stuff. You see it in old films, planning and such. His rule book, did it take off? Did people just go great and everybody's playing?
Not really. Not many people were into it until the 60s and 70s. The early to mid 60s saw a big boom in wargaming, and it was extremely popular with middle class teenage males. Until another thing took off, which took that entire market, and that was the books of J.R.R. Tolkien. So now the same demographic no longer really cared about reproducing their favorite battles from the Napoleonic Wars or anything like that. They want to know how much damage a Balrog could do against
So the fantasy realm.
So the fantasy realm really invaded the wargaming realm at that point, and there was a real demand to try to simulate Helm's Deep and these other sorts of fantastic
from J.L. Tolkien's world. Well, that's interesting that that you have war simulation and fantasy right in the beginning, because I see that now where people specify the kind of game that they play by the genre, and you're saying right in the beginning that two major genres were very mixed.
Yep.
What was the first person to take a game or an interesting person in that era when fantasy was coming online and make a role playing game that really relied upon, instead of just war simulation, instead of the type of role playing a character?
Well, that would be, let's see, Matt, you're going to have to help me out with the rest of the guys' names here, but that would probably be Gary Gygax and
Dave Arneson.
Dave Arneson. Yeah. And a bunch of guys that were part of a tactical simulations
group.
It was a group, yeah. It was like a club.
Okay.
And I don't remember the state, the city was Geneva.
Mm-hmm. So what did they produce? What did this group produce? Gygax, of course, is a pretty famous name in the role-playing genre now still. So what did they create?
Well, they wanted to create, they were the first people to create a bunch of rules that you could sit down and actually play armies of fantasy. You could recreate Tolkien's battles, basically.
Okay.
And then from there, Arneson and his group got kind of, the first game was called Chainmail. And Arneson and a couple of his friends kind of got bored with it.
Was it still like mass battle simulation? It was still like a war.
Right. It was focused on the actual miniatures. It was war gaming pretty much at that point.
Same thing Napoleon was doing.
Yeah.
Just in a fantasy world of J.R. Tolkien's. Okay.
Yeah.
And not just his either. It's a lot of different fantasy sources were used and mixed. It's a pastiche of many, many different authors.
So this is the game Chainmail.
Mm-hmm. Chainmail.
What happened with that? Why did they get bored of that game?
Because simulating a battle over and over again can get kind of tiresome, especially when you have a set number of stats for each army. There's only so many variations you can do. So one of the players said, well, who was running the games, the term game master hadn't been coined yet, and he said, well, why don't I give each player who's running this a certain strategic goal?
An objective.
This game, an objective, yeah. And that was the very beginnings of when you started to see more role-playing, because then each person was out to do something different in the same battle.
Not just conquer the land, but to do certain things.
Yeah, not just wipe out the
enemy.
Now,
see, it's funny to me that you say, like, oh, they got tired of doing the same thing over and over again, because I immediately started thinking of the Civil War reenactments.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same battle, the same sets of players.
They're going to stop soon. It's been years. No.
But they'll start, putting phasers and stuff in it.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, people really get into that talking about old war. They started doing these kind of mission objectives, giving people goals that weren't just conquer land, a kind of change in the way the games were
and
played.
And this went through the late 60s, and in 70 or 71, Arneson and Gygax got together and started working, revamping the rules to add more strategy and simulation as far as variety to the battles, and that's when the first edition of Dungeons & Dragons was created.
Right. It premiered, I think, 1974 at Gen Con.
Oh, the year I was born.
Oh
touching.
Yeah, I think you were conceived at Gen Con.
So
the only person conceived at Gen Con.
So Dungeons & Dragons came about. That's why Dungeons & Dragons has so tied in, but not exactly the same as the creatures and such of Tolkien.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, Derek, you were mentioning earlier about Barker in 1976. Mm-hmm. What game did he produce? And tell me a little bit about
Let's see. Let me. I have to check my notes.
All right, well, fine.
And M.A.R. Barker was his life actually paralleled J.R.R. Tolkien's in lots of ways. He was a linguist who invented this huge fantasy concept in his head, and he made up its own language for the main continent and all this
kind of
stuff.
Sounds a lot like Tolkien.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people actually think credit him with actually having more mad language skills than Tolkien, actually.
Interesting, because Tolkien's known as a linguist.
Mad language skills?
Yes, he did.
That's the vernacular.
Those are my mad language skills.
See, my role in this, because I don't play games, is to heckle.
Miles, you do such a great job of heckling. What would we do without you?
So he had this huge world and this living language and the whole bit, but he wasn't a writer, so he had nothing to do with it until this fantasy gaming came along, and he invented his own game, which was basically Dungeons & Dragons, but with this really deep world that he invented. And Let me see if I can remember the name here. Oh, there it is. It was called Empire of the Petal Throne.
Ooh. Okay. How did it do?
It didn't do very well. In the beginning, it was pretty cool, and it was very interesting for a lot of players to get into something different, because there wasn't just, okay, there's this archetypical knight, and then there's this dragon, and you know, whatever. Everything had names, and there were, and it was a whole culture. He had the religions and gods and everything. And what he also did is, the more people played this game, he actually evolved it. He was based out of Europe, and so his European gaming community would get reports from people around the world and what they were doing, and he would evolve his world accordingly. So in that way, it was a little more interactive than Dungeons & Dragons, but it got to the point where it was too deep and too complicated, and people kind of started losing interest. And so
it's like when a television series has been running for too long, you can't really get it started, so you don't get new people to watch the show,
yeah,
because you just feel confused and lost. So it got kind of deep and involved. Mm-hmm. Let's change this pace now to a little bit about the styles of play. You talked a little bit about how the Chainmail group kind of split up and said, you know, war simulation, large scale, is kind of boring. We want to do things that are more like what an individual will do on the playing field, if you will. So the game systems that are now played, there's a lot of different types of systems, the rules and all the rule books, if you will. But there's also a lot of ways people come at gaming and how they look at it and what they want to get out of it. Now, Matt, you've read quite a bit on this, and actually you've written a little bit as well.
Right, yeah.
Tell me about the different ways people come to style.
Well, I think it should be stressed that in the early days of Dungeons & Dragons, the rules were spread out amongst different rule books. Not everyone had the rule books. They weren't...
It wasn't clean.
It wasn't clean at all. Yeah, so it was really up to these groups of gamers to implement house rules, to interpret what they wanted and, you know, incorporate what they wanted and what they didn't want. So largely gaming, Dungeons & Dragons wasn't strictly the first role-playing game. It provided a lot of rules that people created their own role-playing games with.
Okay. So it kind of had a base structure, if you will, and people grew from that.
Right. Yeah. As far as Dungeons & Dragons goes, it's very gamist in nature.
What does the term gamist mean?
Well, there's a model for role-playing theory that in the mid-90s was popularized. It's the GNS model, or the threefold model, and it's gamist, narrativist, and simulationist. And these are just different elements, different aspects of any role-playing game that you'll find. Gamist is what Dungeons & Dragons heavily leans towards, and that is where the players, what's called metagaming, they know outside of the game, as players, information that their characters wouldn't. So, on a metagaming sense, they... are concerned with and emphasize rules for winning. There's conditions for loss, for winning, for advancement. It's played very much like a game, and that is different than narrativists
when,
who play.
When you say very much like a game, kind of like chess is played like a game. It's
right.
Like, yeah, there's some kind of representation that chess has different things, but really there are rules about it. You play those rules.
Gamists are concerned about balance, in that everyone starts off on somewhat of an equal footing.
Like a chess game.
Exactly. And that that there's always some way that they can win if they are clever enough or powerful enough. Narrativists are different in that they are focused on the story above all, the narrative involved. Not so much winning or losing. It's that everyone's creating a good story with each other.
We haven't really talked about a little bit how the system plays. I'm kind of assuming that some people have a base level about how Dungeons & Dragons works, but I should just give a brief explanation. You get a group of people together. One person has a general description of the world and controls all of the encounters of the world. The other players play a character in that world, and all of them participate kind of like an improvisation with
right.
a rule structure. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying with the narrowest the people that like that type of play, they are focused much more on the story that everybody's creating and the big picture, kind of looking back at it as like reading a comic book in a way,
right.
where they're participating in the story being created.
Right. They're essentially writing a screenplay, a shared story.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into simulation in just a minute. We do need to do some station identification and that kind of thing. You're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak, as I said, and we are taking your calls and comments today at 476-2800. But if you don't have a call and comment about Dungeons & Dragons, please feel free to give us a call at 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877 and donate your money to us. Daria, has anybody done that yet?
Yes. Yes, they have. And we would like to thank Full Steam Marketing and Design for their matching pledge this morning. Thank you very much for that. Thank you to Alfred from Carmel for your continued support of KUSP. To Ori and Ben Lomond, again, thank you for your continued support of KUSP. And welcome to Pearl of Santa Cruz. Welcome to the KUSP family. Thank you so much for your pledge this morning.
And thank you, everyone, for listening into our show, to Democracy Now!, to NPR, the Slo County Report, Land Use Report, and we appreciate all the help you can give, including the help from James from Pacific Grove, Mike and Sylvia from Santa Cruz, and Margaret from Carmel, who is a double dipper and has pledged, that means she's pledged both fall and spring. Thank you very much.
Nice. Yeah, we do this twice a year. We get on air, tell you about our needs of for running the station, how we do things here. We also talk about what we provide and remind you that you're listening all the time to some wonderful shows. You're listening to jazz and blues and world and classic and American roots music. You're listening to great talk shows like Talk of the Bay, our public affairs program, Geek Speak, which is my favorite show, and and multiple other things provided by NPR and also, of course, from I'm forgetting the name, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, but the PMI?
PRI.
PRI.
Public Radio International.
Thank you so much. Listen all the time. And
yeah, so much for the geeks and their acronyms, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, an acronym that doesn't have technology background, out of my mind, easily.
We'd like to thank Anonymous from Watsonville for your pledge this morning. Thank you very much. For the last 9 days of the pledge drive, you have heard about who we are and how we plan to meet the needs of the citizens like you on the Central Coast. Our goal for this drive is $125,000. Right now, we have collected $87,504. We thank everyone who has contributed to this amount. Today is the last day of the drive. Please call now and help us end the drive as close to our goal as possible. Every gift, yours included, really counts. So please call those numbers.
476-5900, 1-800-655-5877. And of course, you can go online to kusp.org and do it the geeky way.
And for a pledge of just $80,
which is $6.66 a month,
you will get the KSP member card, good for 2-for-1 meals at restaurants near you. Also 2-for-1 nights at bed and breakfasts and inns.
And I believe if you are a new contributor to KOSP, you get to choose between a subscription to either Utney Reader or to Wine Spectator. And that's a great bargain right there.
Of course, the bargain that we're really talking about is wonderful programming provided every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the month, every week of the year. Here on KUSP, we provide great content, and you can listen to it for free. And many of you do choose to listen for without a donation. But we would like you to donate. We ask you to donate. We appreciate your donation to the station to help us keep going. You can do that very quickly, very fast, on the phone. People standing by, volunteering their time to take your call and take your pledge. And, of course, you can do it online, computer standing by, waiting for cycles to process.
So the numbers again are 476-5900 and 1-800-655-5877. And of course, KUSP.org.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's that website?
I think it's KUSP.org. This program is also supported by a grant from CruiseIO, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about CruiseIO membership is available online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the Arum with me, we're just speaking with Miles Elam and Daria Troxell. We also have Sean Cleveland, who's been relatively quiet, and, of course, our guests, Matthew Widener and Derek Passaris. We're talking about online role-playing games, but we're going to take a break. I'm sorry, offline role-playing games, just like your mic was offline. Sorry about that. Role-playing games and how the, well, how why they exist, what types of games they are, and all of that jazz. We're going to get back to the topic of simulationist type of play. But first, let's take a break and take a call about technology. Oh, speaking of technology, let me push the right button. Hello, Drew, and welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, thanks. This is totally unrelated to your topic, so sorry about that, but I have this kind of burning question the last couple of weeks. I've got a friend who's got a Windows machine that runs XP, which he installed on the machine, because I think it came with 98, and it won't read a card reader, an SD card reader, to read photos off of the card. And I've never known XP not to recognize, you know, a photo card or that kind of stuff. Have you ever heard of that? Or
do we know the card's functional?
Another card, what?
Do we know the card is functional? Do we know that it actually works?
Yeah, absolutely, because I put it in my machine. I have a notebook that takes cards right into the notebook, and it reads it fine. So
how is the card reader, is it connected to the computer?
It's a USB 2, I think.
Okay.
You might want to check your USB drivers. WinXP has a problem with USB 2 devices sometimes.
Yeah, I haven't had a problem. I have the same thing where I have a card where I plug it in. I haven't had a problem. The only problem I've ever come across was actually on a Windows 2003 machine, and that one was, it was doing this overlapping drive letter thing. Like, it was really hard to diagnose, really hard to find out.
Yeah,
so
but
that's...
Yeah. XP would...
If you right-click on my computer and go to Manage, click on Manage, and then go to your Drive Management. In there, you might see the card reader... is getting stamped on by another drive letter.
Yeah, another thing to check
on is... Or it's
not
getting assigned.
If you have an icon in the bottom right-hand corner, that when you see all those little icons that are in the bottom right-hand corner,
when
you put the mouse over and it would do a tooltip, a little window telling you what it was.
Right, right.
One of them should be safely remove hardware if you have that plugged in.
Okay.
So
if that doesn't show up...
I just installed Windows XP, and I noticed that before I installed the Service Pack 2... Not all of my USB devices were recognized.
Well, Service Pack 2 is on this one. He did
This is strange. It's not working. I would assume that... I mean, is the USB port working for anything else? Have you tried plugging other things into the USB port?
Yeah, no, I don't know if he has or not. I'll have to ask.
It's very possible the machine, you know, like, it has USB ports in the front because the case has it, but it's not plugged into the motherboard. I mean, that's... That'd be, you know, the first thing to check.
They're definitely in the back.
The motherboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing, I mean, you could, of course, check the BIOS to make sure that they're enabled. They shouldn't be disabled. Anybody else got an idea? I mean, if it was 98, it's an early USB
But XP should be...
Even the XP, though, I mean, was there anything different about XP if you install it yourself as opposed to it came with the machine that would make a difference?
Well, a lot of drivers are... kept out of those personalized installs. So what happens is the OEMs are trying to squeeze as much software onto a CD as they possibly can. So what they do is they strip out a bunch of Windows XP drivers and software that, you know, is not needed for the system they're shipping. So an OEM version of WinXP is certainly not the same as a retail version.
But you have a retail version. He installed a full version.
He installed the retail version.
So you want to check to see if the driver is loaded in properly or if there's something going on with USB. And the way to do that is to go to your control panel,
right,
and then click on System.
Yep.
It'll bring up System Properties. Click on the Hardware tab, and then click on Device Manager. And if something isn't working properly, there'll be an
exclamation point with a yellow.
Yeah, or even red. Yeah.
Okay.
And then
if that happens, what do you do then?
You need to track down the correct driver and update it.
And that basically means trying to get the driver for that card.
So if you've got an NVIDIA-based motherboard, you might want to go to NVIDIA.com and download their latest Inforce driver. If you've got an Intel motherboard, go to Intel and look for drivers for that motherboard.
And the way to find that out, can you find out what kind of motherboard you have during the BIOS boot?
That or looking up the manufacturer for the card reader, because they'll usually have drivers for it.
Yeah.
To make sure that
if
works.
It's a Gateway system or a Dell system, then you can certainly look at the model number and then go to their website. But if you built this by hand,
It's a Dell.
Okay.
So look at the Dell model number. Go up there and try to find BIOS updates is what you're looking for.
There might even have a USB driver. I've seen that for some machines.
Okay, so we'd be looking for either a USB driver or a BIOS update for the Dell machine.
So what happened was when USB 2 was coming out, not everybody, and this is, I noticed there was a bunch of AMD systems that were this way, something happened with it didn't work properly.
Like mine.
So they used other chips, and those chips didn't have drivers built into Windows. So you have to go out and find those drivers.
Good luck, Drew from Felton.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Take care. All right. Let's get back to gaming, because, of course, that's why you guys are here. And thank you very much for being here, Derek Passaros and Matthew Widener. We were just talking about the three types of play, the way characters come at the game. We talked about Nerist.
Narrativist.
I can't say it for some reason this morning.
It's hard to say.
Gamist and simulationist. What's a simulationist?
That is an element of a game or a playing style that where the person is more concerned with the integrity of the world and everything in it and how it works on a realistic level.
Meaning, can people do things that in the real world people should be able
to do? Accurately modeled physics. You know, a simulationist would get more out of a game, more pleasure out of a game, knowing that their character can jump realistically and that the mechanics enable that and support that. Whereas a narrativist would be more concerned with, if my character jumps, it doesn't have to be realistic, but does it serve the story? Does it propel the story forward?
Right. Is this a jumping type of person?
And a gamist would be more concerned with, is this giving me a tactical advantage? Can I win by doing this?
Now, all three of these things sound very important to a game.
Right, and all games have elements of every single one of these. Most games lean towards one, but have elements of the others. And just like every player has their own style, more concerned usually with one, but everyone uses all three of them. So
the way both of you are talking about gaming, it comes across to me that it's a pretty deep, complex, interesting thing to do. My wife here has a degree from CalArts in theater. She does performance-based role-playing, if you will, grabs a character from a script sometimes improvisationally.
Oh, that is so nerdy.
And, yeah, and takes
I
and
know.
Takes it
now. Talk you don't geeks. Even use dice?
Now, I know there are theater geeks, and that's totally true and everything, but the thing that's fascinating to me is that when, and Dee Dee just mentioned this from New York, one of our geeks in New York, just said, why is D&D considered to be such a nerdy thing if it's really about imagination and gameplay? Why is it marginalized into this nerdy thing?
Well, originally it wasn't. It started out wargaming, and it actually has its roots in military, like Derek said. Mm-hmm. And in, you know, the 70s, you had military guys doing this, and I was an active service member in the Marine Corps, and
not even in the 70s though.
No, late 90s, uh-huh. And you know, D&D and role playing games were still present even amongst the grunts. So it's not just a nerdy thing. You know, video games are kind of overtaking that now, but at first, it was just college groups, and it was actually seen as cool. But then, yeah, you did get the stigma in the early 80s, and it was kind of seen as geeky. And I mean, I learned to play when I was in Catholic school in eighth grade, and yeah, imagine the stuff that I caught.
Now,
for
wait,
that.
Were you playing Dungeons and Dragons in Catholic school?
Right. Yeah.
Oh man.
Oh yeah.
Now, there's always been kind of this. There's been kind of the general populace hasn't taken it on since maybe that time when it was more war simulation.
Right.
But also groups have definitely attacked it as being because you're doing things that are not the norm, you know.
Christian and, groups.
Yeah.
Mainly.
Yeah. I mean, there
actually,
are
bad specifically.
Yeah.
BADD B something against Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. I mean, there's just the idea. Of course, in the books, there are demons and monsters of all sorts, and of course, the idea of somebody running those and interacting with those is can be dangerous to people that feel that you should be trying to avoid the devil.
That kind of reminds me of when the game Doom was released, one of the original, most popular first-person shooters.
Computer game.
Right, and it was based upon demons and devils coming after you, and people talking about, oh, this game is, you know, fostering the devil, and yet I remember a quote from one of the programmers, which was, could someone please point out the function routine that opens up that nexus to the sixth level of hell?
It's like... It's actually almost the same thing. What happened in the early 80s, there were two suicides, probably, I think they were within 6 months of each other, and both people that killed themselves were avid gamers, played Dungeons and
Dragons.
And
also probably teenagers.
They were teenagers, and both of them were depressed. They were both suffering from depression and all these other things.
Suicide,
and so
depression
it was,
normally come along. Yeah.
Yeah. So and they what they did is, like with Doom, these people had obvious other problems, but you know, they were so quick to try to find something. Okay, it couldn't have been their fault.
Right.
What made this happen?
And
you know.
And it's an interesting but probably non-geeky discussion, so we'll stop.
Right,
we'll drop
I'm just
that
saying
there,
that there's a parallel.
Totally.
There.
I wanted to take this on to, it's clear that it hasn't been in the mass culture, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But now, computer games that emulate these role-playing games.
Yeah,
for example,
because Miles does game. And he plays role-playing games on his computer.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to, yeah. Let's,
yeah,
let's move into that.
So one of the biggest role-playing games out there, if you will, online, is World of Warcraft. It's mm-hmm. a fantasy game.
Which, for the record, I don't that, play. So.
But you played Diablo.
Diablo has
RPG.
Is a
yeah,
game.
But I performed. I don't play that anymore.
Until the next big thing.
Yeah.
I remember
whatever, man. Don't let me in with you.
It's coming back now because of the whole geek chic kind of movement, the whole zeitgeist now, it's that, you know, people are showing off their geekiness, and you get a lot of pretty boy underwear models who are wearing nerd shirts, and, you know,
like
they've
me.
Never played a game of Dungeons and Dragons in their life,
and
right?
You can't be a nerd without doing that.
So, I mean, it is swinging back around. There is more acceptance now. There are a lot of, you know, famous gamers who had actually admitted.
Okay, who?
Ben Diesel.
Robin Williams.
Robin Williams.
Yeah, there are a lot of gamers out there.
That's not surprising.
Yeah. Lyle Troxell is our dungeon master, personally. I think you should be lauded for that.
I think Tobey Maguire. There's quite a few celebrity gamers.
Thank you very much for...
So does that mean you're not a true geek or a true gamer unless you spent time in a basement, you know,
yes.
scrunching for, scrunching for Cheetos?
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about the tie between the online role-playing games and what that and what's there compared to a game around a table with dice and Dr. Pepper and Mountain Dew. So we'll do that in just a minute. First, let's thank some people.
Well, we have a matching pledge.
That's right. We have money
we
on
do.
The table right now.
We have
now.
Money on the table. Speaking of dice, well, not really, but we have an anonymous matching pledge who will match every pledge to KUSP up to a total of $365. Your contribution is going to be matched dollar for dollar. If you're returning or a new member of KUSP, your pledge is going to go twice as far right now. And we would like to thank some people. Oh, wait a minute. I'm supposed to mention those numbers. Yes.
I think so.
476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877, and of course online at kusp.org. I would like to thank Sally from Aromas for your continuing support of KUSP.
And while we're at it, thanking Steve from Santa Cruz and Duncan from Sacramento. These are folks that are the 1 in 10 of our listeners that are members. Only 1 in 10. Can you believe that? Imagine if 9 out of 10 decided, you know what, I'm going to chip in $5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We
that
would be
do it, huh?
Yeah, so happy.
We'd go a long way for the station to be
yeah,
able
so
to
so we're
get.
Asking for those 9 out of 10 people
if
to please pick up the
people,
phone.
And it's easy yeah. to put yourself in this category. Have you donated in the last 6 months? If you haven't, well, you're one of those
yeah.
9 out of 10.
Please yeah. pick up the phone, 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877.
You know, I was thinking about buying something online yesterday. You know, it's my passion. It's my hobby, really.
Buying stuff?
Buying stuff online. But my mind started to go to, like, sort of the bigger picture of that, which is, while it's extremely convenient to be able to do something like that, it's also supporting people who live and work in, like, another part of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I could just get something here locally, and it might cost me a little bit more, but I'd be supporting, you know, my local community, and that's kind of how I feel this pledge drive is. It's really supporting something that means something to you for you here locally. It's going to keep this radio station on the air so that you can continue to get programs that you like Geek Speak or Democracy Now or any of the other shows that you might listen to, the music programs, Dr. Don Mokitika on Saturday mornings, Castle Cottage for the kids on Saturday mornings. So you just have to identify what is it that is important to you that we do here at KUSP and allow that to influence you in making a pledge. And you can do that by calling 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877.
Or the website at kusp.org. And remember that new members are being offered a free 1-year subscription to the Etny Reader or Wine Spectator.
Yes. And your pledge.
And there are other gifts available for anybody.
There are.
You can, when you call in, you can talk about that with the person that's answering the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I want to mention something. You're just saying that, you know, when we buy something, we're online or from the local community, whatever it may be, we're purchasing something for the purpose of having that. What we're talking about here is not the idea of purchasing something so you own it. You own it because you're in the community. It's part of your life because you're listening to it. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about trading you something for what it is. We're talking about your investment in your community. We're talking about saying, this is important. My community is important. The station content that I hear all the time that's great is important to my life. Therefore, I'm going to invest in it. Not because I'm going to get a direct return on it, but because it feels good to invest in it. And I got to say that it really does. Whenever I donate to any of the stations that I listen to, I feel more connected to the station, and I appreciate the station more, and I'm more proud of it. Of course, I'm proud of KQSP. I've been involved in it all my life. I do a weekly show on it. But you can be part of it right now by calling us and donating a little bit of money or a lot of money, anything that you choose. And if you want to do it the really geek way on donations today, what I suggest is going to get some dice, any dice you have in the house. You probably have six-sided dice. Grab like 15 of them and roll it. And whatever number comes up, donate that amount. I mean, it's an easy way to choose the amount of money to donate. And it's really geeky. You can be called a nerd and
yes,
a geeky.
Yes, that is really geeky.
The phone numbers, get your dice, go to the phone. The phone number is 476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, the geekiest way to donate would be to go to geekspeak.org. But if you are a heavy geek...
And you mean KOSP.org.
Yeah, that'd be a lot easier, actually.
Right.
But if you are a heavy geek, what probably is going on is you're in a dark room all the time programming. You listen to KOSP. It's the only thing that keeps you a part of the society. So go ahead and make a phone call, because you'll be able to talk to somebody in person. That might be kind of a good experience. The phone number is 476-5900, 1-800-655-5877.
And, you know, you had mentioned just a little while ago, like, what's the stigma associated with this? And as the wife of a gamer...
With gaming, uh-huh.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of address that, because...
Please do.
You know, I every Friday night, well, not every Friday night, but most Friday nights, I'm at home with the kids, and people are like, well, where's Lyle? And I'm like, well, he's gaming. And there's just sort of this pause that happens. And it's like, how old is he? So I think that there's this stigma attached to it, that it's something that kids do or that teenagers do, or, you know, maybe even if you're in college, you might do it. But by the time you're 31, honey, you should have, like, gotten all of this out of your system.
Wrong.
But I think that it really, from this perspective that I sit on now, mm-hmm. It really is. You brought up that idea that this is about imagination. It's about creativity. You know, Lyle puts a lot of work into creating these worlds that these characters live in. And there were, I don't know, weeks and weeks where he was talking to me and bouncing ideas off of me and creating a universe. And, you know, I just started to really appreciate what it takes and what's involved in getting one of these campaigns up and off the ground, you know, and then, of course, to hear about everything that happens once they're actually...
I don't know. Creating new universes, I think one's just way too many as it is.
So you're saying he can play every Friday?
Oh, boy. Hey, you know, my thing is already on the table about what has to be moved at my house for
game. We'll come and move furniture if he can game.
It's not much different than somebody writing a play and then those people acting out the roles.
Right.
What's
different?
Yeah, so how often do you sell your universes that you're making?
Actually, let's talk about this.
A lot of these stories get turned into books.
Let's talk about the finances of,
oh, really?
Of role-playing. Okay. It's actually becoming a kind of major business. I mean, of course...
Actually, the heyday was the 80s. That's uh-huh. when TSR had Dungeons & Dragons before they got... You know, they sold it. That's where the big money was in... They were getting their books, in Walden Books, you know, all the big bookstores. And then the 90s... Derek, wouldn't you say the 90s?
The 90s were the beginning of the dark age of gaming. That's when you get a lot of... That's where a lot of these gaming theories and all this kind of stuff started happening, because as gamers matured, much like going from wargaming to role-playing, eventually the role-playing then started to evolve, and pretty soon the same rules weren't good for different groups, and so then you got... Well, part of it was a big company called White Wolf that did the Storyteller system, really started this, or at least they didn't really start it, but they were heralded as the people that kind of brought in this new generation of gaming, and they had really rich and dark universe that they created, and a lot of supplements. And this started a big trend. And if you wanted to have a successful game, you needed a lot of information, a lot of supplements,
and a lot of good artwork,
and a lot of fantastic artwork, and the whole bit. So
Bradstreet.
That's right. Yeah, and as so, it got more. It became bigger business, but at the same time, gamers started dividing into different groups, and that was kind of when things started going a little bit downhill. Eventually, TSR went broke, and let's see, where were the other West End Games, a bunch of these other companies went bankrupt. So they kind of considered the 80s the golden age, but if you lump fantasy gaming, if you actually incorporate the computer industry now into that, then I guess we are kind of in it. Mm. But excluding the online gaming industry and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, which actually raises a question for me. What effect did computer games have on this environment? Like, what effect did Diablo have and Warcraft and games like that, where people didn't have to construct the games themselves, or they were constructing maps or constructing, you know, mods for these games, as opposed to sitting down and writing them out or drawing them out?
I'd like to think that, you know, it helped get some new gamers at the tables. Mm-hmm. But I think that the gap between video games, the video RPG games, and tabletop games, I think that it's just this huge gulf, because it's hard turning off your computer, sitting down with your friends, and actually learning how to role play. It's like, what do you do? There's very few books that actually tell you how a game runs. I mean, one person dreams up the story and the rest play, but, I mean, how does it actually go? And most people don't know how, and it's much easier to power on your computer and play a game that's already... It's the perfect dungeon master, because it tells you exactly what's going on. It's a lot harder to use your imagination. So I think, I don't know how much it's doing for it. I think that RPG games online are, they definitely see themselves as higher functioning geeks. Mm-hmm. We're still in the basement. They kind of look at us like we're dirty. Yeah.
And the other thing, Daria brought up a really good point, too. It's also one of those things where if Lyle sat in front of his computer for 4 hours, she probably wouldn't really think of questioning what is he doing, right? Well, he might be online playing a role-playing game online. And whereas being in a basement or just my kitchen for 4 hours, it's a lot larger of a task, and there's, you know, crates to be moved.
And it's really a shame, because I mean, it does promote imagination, creativity, and it's a very social thing. You have a bunch of friends. I mean, take us for example. I've been gaming 22 years. You guys about the same, yeah. Even longer. And as adults, we get together almost every week and sit for a whole night.
And help create a story together.
There's nothing more magical than that. Oh, wow, that sounded
funny. This whole thing, with apologies to George Lucas, but it reminds me of the quote. It's like, so are computers better? No, quicker, easier, more seductive.
Yes, yes.
No, I've neglected one of our listeners who's called in, Robin from San Miguel. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. My question is about a virus.
Okay.
I have... I'm running Zone Lab on my XP system, and I have win32.glider.t, and it says it's treated, but it's still there, and what is this, and what do I do about it? Should I worry about it?
Sean, Miles, can you help her out?
Zone Lab does have antivirus. Do you have the antivirus or the firewall software?
I have the security suite, so I have
everything.
I have everything, yeah.
So it's not able to, it detects this thing, but isn't able to get rid of it.
Right. It says it's treated. It says action taken, but it doesn't say blocked or quarantined. It just says treated. So, and every time I run a scan, it still shows it as being there.
Really? When you have specific file names like that, do a Google search.
On the file name.
You're going to find more information out that way. That's what I would do. That's not something that I've run across personally.
You've never heard of this.
No, well, viruses, there's so many of them.
There are almost 100,000 viruses in any antivirus vendor's database.
You need to go off and just do some research on your own on what you're seeing, because there's just, you know, one virus may act differently on one computer than another. It depends on what's installed.
Thank you very much for the call. We're out of time on GeekSpeak. To continue that discussion, if you'd like to stay on the phone, Robin, you're welcome to do so, and we'll help you a little bit off air.
A remove curse spell was probably.
Yeah.
GeekSpeak is proudly sponsored by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering color printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. Today we were talking about offline role-playing games, dice with paper. a social thing done in basements normally by nerds. And
you are the king of
now underwear models.
And of course, Matt Widener and Derek Pissarros, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anonymous, for our matching pledge again this morning. Thank you so much for that. And thank you, Anonymous, for becoming a new member to the KUSP family here in Santa Cruz.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. Next week we'll be back. We'll be talking about video podcasting with Tyler Barkoft, all about the new way of sharing media, portable media, video media, and the new iPod that does video. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, on the web at kusp.org. Coming up next is The Open Road with Matt Pierce and Dean, it looks like, and at 1 p.m., Two Steps of the Blues with Charlie Lang. Thank you for listening to Geek Speak. For KUSP, I'm Lyle Troxell.